The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It's 12:01. That's the first time I've ever said that. Now, the person you can blame is the man sitting opposite me on the virtual screen, John Mayer, mining analyst, partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yeah, I'm good. Apologies for being
what
a minute late.
What time do you call this? I've never ever said 12:01.
That's shocking, isn't it? That is shocking.
So normally, what I say, John, is welcome to taking. It's 12 o'clock. Welcome to taking stock. I can't do that now. It doesn't rhyme. 12:01. What am I going to say there? By all means, thank you everyone for joining me. Hit that thumbs up button if you could. Subscribe to the channel. Download the Vox Markets app. voxmarkets.co.uk/app. This is what I'm saying, John. We go through some news as always. We'll look at the markets as always. But the theme today is ignore the macro. Ignore it. Focus on the micro. By that, I mean look at stocks. It's a stock market. It's a market of stocks. Look at stocks that are undervalued. Look at stocks that have potential, that are growing. Because today they came out with PMI data. And in fact, I'll share it with you in a bit. But it's a little bit better on the services side. In fact, manufacturing came in a bit better as well. And they're saying now, oh, this may temper, the Bank of England's decision on, reducing rates as soon as they thought. I thought, sod it! I don't care. This is the thing. We know interest rates are coming down. Okay, they may happen in June rather than May. May happen in July. It doesn't matter. But they are going to come down. This year, they will be coming down. That's very bullish for equities. So I'm just saying now, regardless of which month, interest rates come down in, they are going to come down. So I think that, it's very bullish for equities. And so, it's a good position now to look at the companies being hammered because of this, this interest rate rise, inflation, all that. Because I don't know about you, John, but I've seen a lot more placings happening. Now, while, holders of stocks may not welcome that, because there may be a discount, it shows the capital markets are functioning as they're supposed to function. And that means people are raising money. That means investors are prepared to risk their capital. That means risk aversion is going down. That is good for the markets. What do you reckon, Johnny boy?
There's still quite a lot of cash swashing around in the system. There's no doubt about that. And you're absolutely right. We are seeing placings being done on a daily basis at the moment. Yeah, they're slightly scaled down. Some brokers are doing them at bigger discounts than we would like to see. But I think generally there's an acceptance that stocks are bumping along the bottom here. Yes, we're still in a bit of a bear market, but there are people shopping in this bear market, buying up the bargains, and that's the way markets are supposed to function. Yeah. And it's great that there are good numbers of private investors. It reminds me of 2008, after we had the Lehman Brothers crash, and the market hit a kind of floor, and then the market was being sold by big institutions who were liquidating funds for all sorts of reasons, largely because their Arab investors were pulling money out right, left and center. And then the UK private investors came in en masse, bought up those stocks and actually made a killing out of it. In fact, it was fantastic for the UK private investor market, and those guys did well. And I think they're back again. I think there's a lot of that kind of money, that what I would call smart money, people who like to buy low and sell high, not the guys who want to not just the momentum traders. These are guys who are looking 6 to 9 months ahead, saying, yeah, these stocks are cheap. We want to buy in now.
Yeah, absolutely. Pull your computer towards you. Get close to it if you could, John, because your mic is a little bit quiet, but I can hear you. I agree what you said there. The thing that stuck out in my mind there is that the fundraisings are quite small at the moment, which is good, I think. It shows it's happening, but it's like, and I referred to the capital markets as being frozen for a while. And if it is thawing, like ice, first of all, you start kind of drip, 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 small drips, before it actually unfreezes. And then you get some money inflow coming in, which is very good. So as yet, it's still a little bit frozen, but I think it's thawing. We're through the worst period, So you're all right about, now is the time. The biggest gains ever are made from, you know, close to the... No one picks the bottom, of course, but when you start seeing this thawing happening and the capital markets start to function again and everything's been hammered down, or a lot of stocks have been hammered down, this is where the big gains are created, you know, holding now from now in good companies and improving, you know, for like a couple of years, because the initial rally on the first wave of momentum is very aggressive. Let's look at the markets anyway. Here's the indices. FTSE up. It's a screen of green here. FTSE up 0.35%, 7512. FTSE 250, best performer, up 0.8%. AIM All Share again, up to just over 0.5%. In the risers day, it's the miners, Endeavour, Fresnillo. I never know how to say that.
Fresnillo.
All of them, look at that. Anglo American, Glencore. Of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 stocks rising there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are miners. Oh, John, it's getting exciting, isn't it?
Well, it is, because it's been a very bad start to the year for miners. It's quite unusual. In fact, often commodity prices pick up in January as the indices kind of rejig, and it's usually a fairly good start to the year. This year has been very poor. But what we saw was news last night that China had cut the reserve requirement ratio for banks, and that improves liquidity in their market. That will pick up the property market. It really shows that the Chinese authorities are determined to ensure they have steady growth, and that it is growth in China, that there isn't any collapse there. And that should help to drive Chinese internal consumption, which is important. The rest of the world is saying, come on, China, you can't just make stuff for the rest of the world. You need to buy stuff as well. You need to start consuming products, not just Chinese products, but you need to start consuming things that everybody else produces, like Harley Davidson's, for example. That's one of the big things that the Americans are always trying to sell into China, is Harley Davidson's for some reason. The French, yeah, of course, are trying to sell wines that the Chinese mix with Coca-Cola. I'm trying to think what
wine
we
mixed with Coca-Cola. That must taste horrible.
Well, I'm sure they like it. I think we're trying to sell them Burberry and fabrics and things like that.
Yeah.
Who knows what we're really pushing on the Chinese these days?
Yeah, and there was also news yesterday about the Chinese are considering injecting capital into the markets, which is unusual. I can't imagine that happening over here. I mean, it's done in a more indirect way over here, of course. But I mean, I don't know what the figure was. Something like
It's a trillion renminbi, which is about $140 billion. Can you imagine what that would do to the UK market if our government did something like that?
Yeah. Wow. So how are they doing that? Any more details on that? I mean, is buying stocks, or how does it work? What are they doing?
Well, the worst case is they just print cash. But what they tend to do is they tend to borrow it one way or another. They effectively, it comes from nowhere, but they'll try and do it off balance sheet as much as they can. Now, I don't know exactly how they plan to do this one. And maybe they are just going to print a trillion yen worth of currency. We don't know. I mean, the yuan is slightly weaker at the moment against the dollar, but I think they can manage a weaker currency. I mean, yes, it makes commodity imports slightly more expensive, but then they've been in a deflationary environment, so a little bit of commodity price inflation isn't going to be a bad thing for them. It'll squeeze margins for the SMEs, the small and medium sized enterprises, and of course the parastatal companies as well. But I think they can manage it.
Yeah, and what effect do you think it'll have on, you know, literally junior resource companies over here then?
Well, when you look at junior resource companies, they're involved with the production, well, the discovery and the production of the commodities that China is buying in. So if you take an example, Atlantic Lithium, they're getting quite close to building that project. And, you know, China is going to definitely buy more lithium in, because it's producing huge numbers of electric vehicles and the batteries are getting ever larger. So, these things are positive. They're positive moves. They're certainly not negative.
Yeah. This is the AIM-ALL share. It's now up sort of 10% or 11% from the low. The low, I'm saying now, that the 26th of October was the low, you know, in AIM. I'm confident in this because we've had a rally to the, let me just get rid of the 50-day, but a rally to 200-day moving averages, pulled back, but now we're maybe seeing a bottom here in the AIM-ALL share at 735. Which is quite good. But and like I said, it didn't really, last time it got above 200-day moving average, it just fell off and come back a bit. So if it rallies towards that again, that's very bullish. And we're not far off that. It's at 751 and we're now at 742. So we're not far off that. We're literally 9 points away from quite a bullish move, a break of this 200-day moving average. It's the second time. It's not happened. That has not happened since, well, you've got the COVID dash for crash here. But like I said, when that tends to happen, it tends to be very bullish. Like I say, back, if we go back to 2017, it rose above it, came back down, a big dip, back up, and then nice rise there. So I'm thinking, ignore the macro for now. We know, you know, inflation, we've seen the peak in inflation. Interest rates are probably coming down. It's no point. It's a mug's game trying to guess which month it's going to happen. There's no point. The fact is, it's going to happen, you know. So I think, see, that's a bullish thing. Let's go to a Vox, just a front page of Vox there. Have a look. Oh, there we are. People want a chair. Price dropped there. You know, some nice chairs. What's your favourite chair there, John? Out of the chairs you can see there, which would you go for?
I'd go for the nice, simple one on the right-hand side of my screen.
This one here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we got one of those, actually. They're okay. On the front page, you can check out Paul Hill. He's chatting with the CEO of Lords Trading Group. They're trading up statement today. They're like a mini Travis Perkins. Very good bellwether for the industry. But they've held up very well of late. And, their customer service is excellent and worth looking at. There's a report on there as well. Atlantic Lithium secures initial fire. In fact, I'm chatting to Neil soon on the podcast thing, but he wants to chat about stuff you've written. In fact, he highlighted your email, John, the SP Angel email. And so take us through there, because the news out today is one of the most read. It completes these £5 million subscription from the Ghana Minerals Income Investment Fund, which is a good thing. But yesterday was didn't one of their big holders increase their holding?
Yes, you're correct. There's a group. It's a very professional South African group. They own a number of mining businesses based in South Africa, and they own stakes in the Vision Blue Fund, for example, in Gemfields and one or two other businesses. Very professionally run, and they're called Assor. They came into Atlantic Lithium, in fact, when it was called Iron Ridge. Back in those days, the company was exploring for iron in Gabon. Unfortunately, there wasn't a lot of iron and there wasn't much of a ridge either. So they went into lithium.
It's going to change the name then.
Yeah, exactly. So they moved into lithium in Ghana, which was extremely well-timed and opportunistic move. They acquired some brilliant licenses in Ghana where they knew there was lithium. But nobody was interested in lithium at the time, so there was no competition for any of this stuff. And of course, the rest is history. Now the group has £130 million market cap. I'm sure it's worth at least twice that. And this group, Assor, which has been backing the company for a long time, has said, well, we'd quite like to... I mean, I'm sure they don't really want to be running businesses in South Africa for the rest of their lives. And I think they're quite... Well, they've made one informal and I think one more formal offer for the business, and that's been recorded in RNSs by the company. And they increased their stake by 3%, which is what they're allowed to do under the Australian takeover rules. They're not subject to UK takeover panel rules, unfortunately. Otherwise, they'd have to make a bid already. So the rules are slightly different in Australia, but they can't move another 3% for a year. So they've got to wait. Or they have to make a takeover offer for the company. So it looks like they're getting ready to do that. And I suspect negotiations may be going on in behind the scenes. I don't know that, but it is more than likely, because once a company makes an offer, it doesn't usually just walk away from that. It usually comes back with something else to sweeten it one way or another.
Yeah, they obviously like what's going on there. Well, I'll chat to Neil and ask him about that. Obviously, he wouldn't want me to say too much, but... Maybe, it'll just work on nuance and suggestion. But the way to play this, like I said, you know, Atlantic Lithium also, you know, obviously a very good project. Lithium obviously going to be in demand, you know, going forward. As yet, the lithium price is a bit soft, isn't it? And Neil was saying that's to his advantage. We aren't producing lithium yet. And if this, you know, softening of the lithium price takes out potential producers at higher operating costs, it's not a problem, you know. So in my mind, if it's literally say, you know, if you like Atlantic Lithium and you've done your research on it, it's just looking at the lithium price, isn't it? If the lithium price starts to move in the right direction, that share price will go very well, I think. Do you think?
Well, that's right, because we know sales of electric cars are going up a lot next year. Bloomberg New Energy Finance, who do numbers on all this, reckon there'll be a 33% increase in sales of electric vehicles. The capacity increase for electric vehicles, particularly out of China, is going to be a lot, probably more, somewhat more than that. Electric vehicle consumption, well, sales were up 22% last year. So we're talking really big increases. Battery pack sizes are getting larger. They're somewhere around 50 kilowatt hours per vehicle these days. So that's on the increase. Everybody wants the ability to do more miles and not worry about charging so much. And okay, it's not necessarily going to be a completely smooth ride, but most of these batteries use lithium. Lithium is such a light metal that it's very hard to replace. I mean, why would you want to replace lithium in a battery, frankly? And the cost of it isn't that great when you consider how light the metal is itself. So, you know, a ton of lithium actually goes a long way because it's such a light metal. And yes, I mean, projects like Atlantic Lithium are good. Some other lithium projects are being slowed down or even put on hold, which is fair enough. There was a massive rush into the business, but we know that a lot of new mines are needed. So yeah. We don't see enough new mines to actually meet the future demand, particularly when we get to 2030 and 2035. So having a little bit of a pause in the market is good. Lower production means it just sorts out the men from the boys, if you see what I mean. Yeah. And Atlantic Lithium is absolutely right there. It's almost ready to start digging. It's just sorting out the last elements of the financing. I know they've got lots of companies in the data room looking at the 50% offtake that they are looking to sell at the moment. So it's all there to play for. And because we're nomad and broker to the company, we're very close to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, let's have a look at some of the most read Premier African Minerals. I don't know if you know anything about those, John, but they are doing lithium as well, aren't they? But I don't know where they're at.
They have the Zulu project in Zimbabwe. And in fact, lots of Chinese companies running around in Zimbabwe. They recently bought a few years ago a business that's owned by a friend of mine out there for nearly $300 million, which was a very good trade. And the clever thing that Premier are doing is they've taken the mining equipment from the failed tungsten mine that they had. Unfortunately, that one didn't quite work out, but they're going to use that equipment, the ball mill's being commissioned at the moment in Zimbabwe. They're going to use that on the lithium mine, and they reckon they'll get production up and running in February, which is pretty good going. They will then have to sell that production to somebody to add value to that in Zimbabwe, because the Zimbabweans are saying they want everybody to add value before they export the lithium over to China. So we'll see how that goes. Nothing ever happens quite so smoothly as it should do, but at least it's all going in the right direction. And the drill results coming from the Zulu project look pretty good.
Yeah, okay. I'll just whiz through some of these. Just most rare is Barren Oil Farm Up signed. If you know of any information, just let me know. I don't know if it's risen previously, but Boyle, good ticker there. But what's happening here? It's not even moving. So I don't know much about Barren Oil, but I judge it by the share price. People don't seem enamored with that. Fentra, a lot of people, I've seen on social media talking about this. Operations and financial update, and they did down just shy of 1%. So I'm sure maybe either people are missing something or there's not that impressive in news. If you know about Fentra, you know, drop it in the comments. If you know of any of these companies, it's not a bad little rise, though. Look at that. A series of higher lows they're going on. Let's sort of scroll down here. EasyJet trading update. People seem to be happy with that. Q1. In fact, Q1, they always obviously make a loss in the first half of the year. But Q1 had a loss before tax, 126, which is less than the previous one. Load factor down 1 percentage point year on year. Ticket yield up 2%. In fact, there's some news out today about drip pricing. There's a consumer, they're going to crack down the watchdog on, or the government, on drip pricing. And they say, especially happens a lot with low-cost airlines, because you book a ticket, it seems very cheap. And all of a sudden, you get all these extra pricing. Do you want a seat? Or do you want to visit the toilet? Or are you taking bags with you? Anything you want to do seems to incur an additional charge. So they're cracking down on that. I think Paul Hill talks about Equal somewhere up here, but there's an extension to the strategic review here, not a lot of movement in the share price. Diversified Energy, this is very interesting. They did apparently fall off a bit of a cliff. I didn't see the chart, but this was these short selling. In fact, this happened as well, the Piedmont, didn't it, with lithium, when a short selling note came out. And you realize what these people do, they just put a short selling note out. People sell, and basically they're in on the short, and then they also buy it back up when it bounces back up. So it's very disingenuous, isn't it? It should be illegal. Do you remember that, John, that short selling note?
The short selling activity with Atlantic Lithium was totally disingenuous. In fact, the news they used to short sell it wasn't completely incorrect, but it was inappropriate. It wasn't relevant. But they still used it to knock down the stock.
It's not on the resource that they were about to mine, was it?
It was on a license that is just irrelevant to what they're actually working on.
And it was
in relation to the son of a guy called General Mosquito, who's part of the opposition party in Ghana. So there was a political angle to it as well, which is mining companies don't want to get involved with politics, and they certainly don't want to get involved with the opposition party or any party, frankly. When they acquired these licenses, they were interested in doing exploration, but they actually haven't gone anywhere near them. So the whole thing was a complete irrelevance. And I suspect the short sellers are still working on something irrelevant here as well.
Yeah, General Mosquito. That conjures up an image in my head. Look at that. I mean, but having said that, Diversified Energy Company, the chart hasn't been going well for a while. And you can see that even just crossing 200 moving average. It's, 24.5 quid a share across the 200 moving average. And now it's down to 878. So you can see the downtrend started way before that. But what you don't want is to be a holder, a long suffering holder, and have a short selling note come in as well, which is annoying. But it's almost like saying, how did people get away with it? Revolution Bars. Have you been to a Revolution Bar, John?
Not that I know of, but they sound good.
Yeah, well, they're trading. They're saying here they've taken on a bit of debt at Revolution Bars. Is it the lady from? No, it's not. But Revolution Bars, they've taken on a bit of debt, of course, and they listed not long back. But they did say, whilst Christmas trading, and I assume this is going to be happening with quite a few companies, while Christmas trading was quite good, they do say here, in the 2024 outrun, despite strong Christmas trading, as reported above, the improving like trend for H1 January has softly started, basically. A guest recover from the expense of Christmas. Inflation still high. And this is the thing, if you employ a lot of people around about minimum wage, whatever, then you're going to take a bit of a hit anyway, because inflation is still high. We cannot assume that the 14.8% increase in the national minimum wage for 18 to 20-year-olds plus the 8.8% increase for those over 21 from April flows through to increased discretionary spend. Because, of course, not only the people they employ, but also their customers are around about that age group. And so they said, it is, however, a material increase in cost for each of our businesses. And because of that, they've downgraded. But they do have net debt of 20 million. Now, of course, when you're like a resource company, that's acceptable, because what you're going to be churning out will have high margin. But net debt of 20 million, and there are 6.95 million market cap. That, to me, is slightly worrying. It's a debt level that's a little bit, I think, if it's a shareholder, I'd worry. Bellascura Tech Capital sold Bellascura shares. This is probably why Bellascura has gone down in recently, but they still hold 7.73. Where is Bellascura? In fact, it's sort of Revolution Bars, RBG, on the chart there. Yeah, like I said, massive downtrend. In fact, going back November 21, the height of the bull market, 25 pence a share, down to 2, nearly 3 pence a share. Oof, that's not good. Bell Oscura, of course, have taken a bit of a hit. You've got the pressure of selling there, but maybe now if that pressure is released, then they'll bounce a little. So I don't know if you looked at strategic minerals in the week. Did we cover that last week, John, or they had some news out or not? SML.
They have had news out. In fact, we haven't covered it. But I certainly wrote about it, and I was in touch with management because they have the customer that had disappeared for buying the magnetite or the magnetite material they make at the Cobre project in New Mexico in the United States. That customer has come back.
He's reappeared.
Yeah, they're taking 20,000 tons of magnetite this year at the very least. There's another customer they're talking to who's also looking at taking, they say, an equivalent amount. So let's say that's another 20,000 tons. Plus, their existing customers take around 15 to 20,000 tons. So we're looking at 55 to 60,000 tons of magnetite ore, which is quite a lot of revenue. And they were talking about selling that at, shall we say, existing prices. So I did work out in the note how much revenue that was. So, I mean, it's quite a significant increase in cash flow for the company.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like happy days for strategic minerals going forward. So we are nomad and brokers. So it's our job to kind of figure out what these things are worth. They'll be using some of that cash to develop the Redmore copper tin tungsten project in Cornwall. That project still is a little way off, shall we say, resource definition grade, and certainly certainly a long way off a production decision. But it's nice to see these advances being made. They've also got a copper project in South Australia, which is just waiting for finance. And maybe this gives them the money to actually take that one ahead as well.
Yeah, and also, just is that a sign of, you know, a more bullish environment, just that customer coming back and now more customers coming on board? Is that a sign, you think, of a more bullish environment?
That is a really good point. And in fact, it's a question I meant to ask them, because, you know, why did that customer go away? He probably went away because everybody was worried about the economic environment in the US. Now there's a lot more confidence in the markets. Customer comes back. He's probably using that magnetite for maybe railway projects, for, you know, heavy duty construction projects going forwards. And it sounds like that sort of economic activity is getting going again. You've got the big Biden IRA stimulus going on, where they were looking to build lots of railways and to upgrade grid infrastructure for their power grid and building lots of new wind farms and solar farms in the US. So there's lots of that going on. And I think that's probably why this customer has come back. So he's got orders that requires the magnetite probably to feed into mixing with concrete, into those sorts of projects.
Yeah. When you said the customer disappeared, it did give me an image of just a little shopkeeper, you know, chatting to a customer, the customer asking for something. He turns around, look behind him on the shelf, turns back, and the customer's gone.
You conjure up images of Mr. Ben, if anyone remembers that.
Is it Mr. Ben? That was a time, yeah, Mr. Ben. Let's also have some other news here. Some risers. System One came out with a trading update, and I said you should always look out for these. Bodies of 5 million market cap, not quite sure what they do, but systems, basically. The marketing decision platform, but as you can see year on year, it's a very good total revenue of 28%, and they do say ahead of market expectations, which is very good. And it's the group final quarter of the year, good trading momentum, followed consistently strong December quarter. As a consequence, the board believes the group is now well placed to deliver results ahead of previous expectations. Always look out for that. That's very good. You almost know, almost an upgrade cycle is coming if that continues. But and that, as opposed to, you know, I mean, I think some investor traders tend to try and jump on stocks that have fallen. You should look the other way, because if a stock has fallen, they've had at least bad news. Generally, bad news doesn't sit on its own. It's not a lonely bedfellow. You've got some other bad news coming on the way. But when a company starts performing, then they tend to carry on performing. So System One, maybe look with a look. It has risen today. SYS1, and you see it's jumped nicely. In fact, back from December, it did very well. If you go back and have a look at that, even in October, they were talking about slightly ahead. And so that would have been before the rise, but then they did interim results and that pushed it up. But again, like I say, interim results come out. They are better than expected. It rises. Now the trading update, better than expected again, goes up again. So there's a tip, ladies and gentlemen. I always look for companies outperforming because they tend to carry on outperforming. Another one, actually, I think was, Aria. I don't know what the heck they do, really, but 11.6 million market cap, so microcap, a design-led specialist flooring company. We believe in growing by doing this different. We constantly looking for new ways to please and impress our customers. High-quality, original products. But they've come out with a trading update and a 5 million quid investment in a facility. Let's look at that. What's it? Martin Toogood is not exactly. I quite like that. But what do they say? Strong sales growth observed in the first half of 2023, which is unusual. You think you assume every company's having it hard or difficult, but you know they're not. That's what stock picking is about, I suppose. Find the ones doing well. Has continued throughout the full year with further wins in key exports market. In addition, the group has seen continued interest in low carbon products and the launch of two carbon neutral products being well received. What's the AIEA? It's AIEA. Let me look at the chart there. AIEA. There we are. EIA. Oh, it's quite a liquid stock. You can see that by the bitty chart. But it has come off a low here and it's rising. But there we are. Some of the favorite, in fact, comments by all means. Alan's commented there that let's have a look at two fundraisers today, John, right? Two very different fundraisers. One is Molecular Energies, I think it's called, and one is Berici. Molecular Energies did a small one at, I think, a 50% discount. Are you involved with that?
Ow. Ouch, that's not good. I would question the broker that's done that one. I don't think that sounds like that doesn't sound like a good service to the company or its shareholders.
Yeah, well, this is a good one here. Verici DX, they do kidney transplantation markets. They did diagnostics in this. I think we talked about this with Vadim before. But 60 million market cap, only a 10% discount, and they raised 6 million. So that's a good chunk of cash on that size market cap. You know,
that's more like
10%
sounds
discount.
Like a good company.
So exactly. And now they said they've got which is quite nice. When you're looking at, I always say this, when you're looking at loss-making companies, one of the first things or two questions you should ask yourself is how much money they got, you know, how long will it last? And what's quite nice is they now with revenue growing in certain key end markets, they did say they have now, following the placing, the company's cash runway will be extended into 2026. That is over 12 months. That's good news. It's almost like now, when you've got a hope high potential stock, which is all about story, pretty much, it's almost like largely pre-revenue, story is very important. But if they haven't got any cash, that becomes the story. That's the worry. So once they start raising cash, you think, okay, it's focusing back on the story now and the potential of the stock. So there's a ticker on Verici. I do like them. I held them a little while back. In fact, down here with Ed, a decent amount of cash. They're at equaling their market cap, and I held them, and they rose, but they started falling back, so I came off of it. But now I think the funding is in place. That's set. Obviously, you may have a bit of churn in people selling a bit of stock here and there, but at least now they can focus on the business rather than the cash element, the financing. You know. So MEN, this is it used to be called something else, Molecular Energies. You may have heard of them previously, John, but look at that. That is where they closed yesterday at 75 pence. Now 35 pence on the fundraise. That market cap is wrong, I assume. But
remember, the function of small cap markets, on AIM, of the small cap standard list, it's not just to enrich the shareholders who buy these companies, but also to help these companies with the capital they need to grow going forwards.
Yeah.
And by and large, they do a pretty good job at that. I mean, otherwise, companies wouldn't bother listing at all. But it gives investors the ability to buy, to trade in and out. Unfortunately, because we've been in such a poor market with, you know, where people have been taking money out, for example, they're taking money out to pay their tax bills, they're taking money out to pay for their holidays, all sorts of things. But now what we're seeing is new capital coming back into these markets because unfortunately, the valuations on a lot of these small cap stocks are just too low. So there's good opportunity, and at least markets seem to be functioning more in the way that they should do.
Yeah, sorry, Alan. It reaches over 2 years cash runway, not 12 months. Yeah, no, I said over 12 months. That's what I'm looking at. When you're looking at, you know, pre-revenue, loss-making stocks, if you've got a company that's got over 12 months and they have comfortably over 12 months, so 2026. Where are we now? 2024, yeah. So here we go. Mike says, you sound like a man ready to put his remaining cash to work, Justin. Well, yeah, if the opportunities arise, you know, even you know, in these markets right now, even if you have a big rise, there's always opportunities in the markets, always, if you look hard enough. Graham, JDW, results showing a slowing growth to 5.8% like-for-like sales in the last 3 weeks. They had good Christmas. Yeah, that's happening with a lot. Well, you know, a lot of these leisure companies, you know, will be saying, good Christmas. This is JD Weatherspoon, by the way. So let's have a quick look at that. Share screen there. Trading announcement here. Oh, hang on, who's been buying here? Tim Weatherspoon. No, what's his name? Tim. I can't think of his name. What's his name? Tim, the Weatherspoon guy, John. You know, he's very, very pro Brexit, isn't he?
I think we just know him as Tim Weatherspoon, don't we?
Tim, yeah. But they do say, in the 25 weeks to the 21st of January, like-for-like sales were 10.1% to the 21st of January. Okay. And so let's look at, does it say outlook? Okay, like-for-like sales in the last 3 weeks were 5.8, so that's halved pretty much. There we are. But do they do outlook? Oh, Tim Martin. There we are, Tim Martin.
That's it.
Weatherspoon's, like the hospitality industry, has seen a consistent but slow recovery following the pandemic. Although inflation is in general reducing, labour and energy costs are far higher than pre-pandemic. The main issue for pub trade is that labour costs of around 30% of sales compared to around 10% for supermarkets. Yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? I do like Tim, the fact that he always likes to get his, you know, speech out there and tell what he thinks. The price of a pint in a supermarket is about £1. So a 10% increase in labour costs, which are around 10 pence per pint, necessitates a 1 pence increase in the selling price of covered costs. Okay. However, pubs, the average selling price of a pint is £4.50. The labour per pint is therefore around £1.35. Wow. Necessitating a 13.5% increase. That's interesting, the way he puts it like that. Literally, they need to put, what, 1 pence, is that right? Or 10 pence. And then he put, so anyway, you know, he keeps saying this. They can't compete with the supermarkets. At the same time, pubs pay higher VAT, business rates, supermarkets, further exacerbating the price disparity. In particular, pubs and restaurants pay 20% VAT in respect to food sales, where supermarkets pay almost nothing. Tim,
Justin,
what would you do?
I don't know how you feel about your shopping, but I don't get the same atmosphere in my supermarket as I do in the pub over the road. So, you know, there's no competition, really. I do not go to the supermarket to buy myself a pint. I'd much rather go to the pub
aisle
with my friends.
Yeah, you almost get ushered. I hate it when I get ushered out by the security. I'm just standing there in the supermarket enjoying my pint. So, excuse me, mate, you can't be doing that here. You know, pour yourself cans into a glass. All right, fella, out you go. What's wrong? In fact, maybe J.D. Weatherspoon, maybe Tim should start a supermarket, you know, or something like that, you know. Or even, it's just some way of reclassifying his pubs a supermarket. Just have a couple of aisles in there, you know, doing that, and then benefit from lower VAT and all that stuff. It's maybe a loophole somewhere. But I understand what he's saying. A lot of people now, since lockdown, maybe not going out. And, you know, a lot of the costs in pubs are not down to the beer, are they? Just everything else, like VAT on top and all that stuff.
I think you're onto something. You're onto something there, Justin. If you had pubs in supermarkets, you might have a lot more men doing the shopping.
Yes, maybe a JD Weatherspoon's concession in a supermarket, and I'm not generalising here, but I am. You know, the wives can go off shopping, and the men just have a couple of pints, watch the sport or something. Yeah, there we are. I understand what he's saying. He's been squeezed, a lot more than supermarkets. And let's be honest, supermarkets, even though low margin, they are making a bundle of cash. And so it's an unfair comparator, maybe. Any other falls today? Yeah, Men was there. AQAI turned at a fundraising as well at discount. There's also East Imperial did a fundraise. Zoo. Now, I don't know about Zoo, but they're certainly in the doghouse as far as shareholders are concerned. So they do. It's quite interesting, John. They do, whenever you see, you know, especially with Netflix and TV like that, whenever you see sort of any kind of, you know, programs that are meant for the international market. They'll reconfigure it if it needs subtitles or it needs audio transcription or voiceover work. That's what they do. So they work with Hollywood studios. And they were hit massively when the strike happened and the contracts around the world. And they came up with a trading statement today saying basically delays are going to take longer than they thought. They still got net cash, but since that strike, you know, work's coming through a lot slower than they thought. And it was a bit of a darling. It literally did very well, Zoo Digital. Look at that. I mean, you know, from back in October 2020, it was 53 pence a share. It rose up to over £2 a share. And look at that. Since the writer's strike and everything, that's come down from there. And now it's down at, 42 pence. But, you know, if it's a good business model, and it could recover. So it's one of the ones I think you should put on your watch list. It was quite highly valued at the time. Oops, I put on the wrong one. So maybe, you know, maybe a relook at that. But there are companies, a lot of companies fall out of bed. That happens all the time, not just in a bear market. Companies fall out of bed and recover. Just got to be patient and wait for them to recover, I suppose.
One of the features of a bear market is good companies with greater liquidity get sold down more than less good companies that don't have the liquidity to sell into. So look for good quality companies that have uncharacteristically fallen to low levels, and that's where you go.
Yep, exactly. There's quite a few, actually, you know, stock market darlings have fallen out of bed recently. So just quickly looking at business stories, here's the PMIs, the Purchasing Managers Index, and they've all beat, that's all in the green. These are the forecasts. This is the composite. This is these two put together. So we're made up of obviously services, and that we're largely an 80% service economy in the UK. So that's, you know, very influential. But that's beat. They're expecting. That's previous. That's forecast. So they're expecting 53.2, a drop from previous month. It came at 53.8. So it's quite a big beat there. Manufacturing still below 50, still contracting, but not as low as they thought. They thought it'd go from 46.2 to 46.7, but it went to 47.3. And now they're saying, oh, the Bank of England may not reduce interest rates in May. Who cares? They'll do it this year. It's going to happen, you know.
But I think the Bank of England will wait till the Fed moves. And the reason for that, in fact, I had an email conversation with David Smith at the Times on this, because David Smith writes in the Sunday Times on the UK economics. They'll want to keep the prop up the pound, because if the pound weakens, then we start to import more inflation. But they'll wait for the Fed is terrified that if they drop interest rates too early, then the inflation will suddenly jump up again. So I think they're just taking a very, very cautious view to holding rates a bit higher for a bit longer. We know they want to cut rates. Everybody wants to cut rates because everybody wants to stimulate growth. They're very lucky in the States. They are bringing jobs back from China. The one thing COVID showed us was you can't allow the Chinese to make all the components for your cars, for your aircraft, for whatever, because unfortunately supply lines get cut, things get delayed, people get locked down, and suddenly you can't get the stuff. So more manufacturing is going back to the States, it's coming back to Europe from China. And that's actually been very good for jobs in the US. Not quite so good for jobs over here, but I still believe a lot of this stuff will come back into the UK if the government creates the right environment to bring companies, bring manufacturing back into the UK, back into Europe, then that will be a huge benefit to us. Big problem, of course, is the war in Ukraine is still making everybody very cautious about energy prices in Europe. Our own government energy policy is in complete disarray. Yes, we're building wind farms like mad and more solar farms, but what we need is much more baseload nuclear power. At the risk of upsetting everybody in Greenpeace, we do need this. In fact, even Greenpeace recognize that nuclear power is important, because you can create a lot of power without creating a lot of carbon dioxide. And that's the big enemy in the world at the moment, is more carbon dioxide and global warming than anything else.
Yeah. So hang on. So you're saying you reckon that the Fed are waiting. Who's the Fed and the Bank of England? Bank of England are waiting for the Fed to go. That's what you're saying. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, if the Bank of England cut before the Fed, then they risk collapsing the value of the pound. And if you collapse the value of the pound, you import inflation.
Yes, exactly.
So I think Andrew Bailey, who is clearly trying to be more cautious these days, is going to wait. He'll cut rates as soon as he knows the Fed is going to cut rates, and it'll almost certainly be straight after they do that.
Yeah, I like that theory, of course, yeah. Because, like I said, commodities, everything denominated in dollar terms, aren't they? So that would have a big effect. In fact, looking at commodities, I did get an alert on copper yesterday. Look at that, it crossed the 200-day moving average, largely down that Chinese news about stimulus and all that stuff. But
We're waiting for the Chinese Lunar New Year. That's in a couple of weeks' time. And what happens is, because prices have been falling, traders and factories, I think, have been selling commodities into that, knowing they've got it's normally a 10-day, two-week shutdown over the Chinese Lunar New Year. And then they'll come back into the market sometime after that. Often they're quite slow at coming back into the market to buy commodities after the Lunar New Year. But I think this year might be a little bit quicker.
Yeah, the hangover maybe. Yeah, exactly. Maybe they'll be a quicker. It'll be interesting to see that. So when is that?
I forget what the dates are exactly, but it's in February, and it's normally over the time of... We're all going down to Cape Town for the big mining conference at the Indaba. So we'll have 10,000-odd mining people all in the same place. And I noticed all the hotels booked up really early, which I think means that the Chinese will have a few cruise ships docking in the Cape Town harbour and filling up the hotels ahead of us.
Wow. God, you live a life, John, aren't you? Hey? Wow. Marvelous stuff, John. Thanks for that. Thanks everyone for watching. And if you could, if you like some of the content here, by all means hit that thumbs up button to show your appreciation. And even a bit further, subscribe to the channel. And even a bit further, download the Vox Markets app at voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Just last comment from Alan. So the Bank of England has never got anything right when it comes to interest rates. They will probably leave it too late to reduce and cause more pain for a lot of people. Yeah, I agree with you, Alan. They were slow to raise. And I just find it extraordinary, John, that emergency sort of thing they did it was like reduce interest rates nothing. That was an emergency measure, like in 2009. And it lasted for like 10 years, more than that. I think you must have realised that would create a big problems, for inflation and all that stuff. But there we are. Marvellous stuff. Cheers to that, John. Speak next week.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.